Blog Talk Radio.
Family, greetings, Hotep. Welcome to the Tear to Read Room. You've got your Omiyika 7 live coming to you straight from my studio. I am your Empress, here to serve you, and I am your Maliwa. I am your mother, too. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you to another day in the Tear to Read Room. We weren't here yesterday, out doing work in the community, ladies and gentlemen, out for the voting election. We had a great miracle yesterday. Karen Freeman was inducted into the seat of our mayor and our great city, Gary. We made history here in Gary, Indiana. So we celebrated from the break of dawn until the break of dawn. So we had to do the thing properly. We had to do our lion dance. You know, with whatever we do, we're going to bring forth the lion dance, and we're going to keep the party going. Because this is a celebration for Gary, Indiana. The northern Indiana people are ecstatic about our new mayor that's coming on board. And we're going to be supporting those political entities out there. And come the next election in May, we're going to be out there lobbying for Obama. I don't know who you decide to cast your vote with, but you need to make up your mind. And make it up soon, because the day will be approaching us in a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to our new segment. We have been talking about To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. And what was on the mind of Nina Simone when she came up with the lyrics to Be Young, Gifted, and Black? Was she telling our youth something by saying you have an advantage, you have a cutting edge because you're young and because you're black? So what do you do with those two scenarios? We know that there's one strike against us for being black. This Nubian scar that we wear on our skin, it allows us to be put through so much turmoil. But on the other hand, our youth gives us an advantage. So what do we do about this ability to have youth in our hand? We use it while we can. And if we can be lyricists, if we could be writers, if we could put the message out in the atmosphere that we want to permeate, then we write. I say we become writers. I say we find a pulpit and possess it and possess your pulpit and speak from the audio pulpit and speak from the pen and paper. But let your voice be heard. I'm not only talking about the youth. There's a lot that some of you elders could be saying, a lot that some of you middle-class people who are baby boomers could be saying. Here is an opportunity to voice your opinion through writing articles, newsletters, but write nevertheless. Look at the people that are producing our media who are writing and becoming millionaires. Can you imagine if you just use your gift, your ability to talk about your family and write from the perspective of your family life? That's what I chose to do, to write my short stories from the perspective of our family life. And just before we left this session, I gave you a little segment of the writings that I'm doing to put together my short stories on our family entitled From the Lily Pad. Now, we'll be doing another segment from the Lily Pad today. I might get a little chucked up with tears on this particular one. This is the one that brings tears to my eyes and others' eyes. But I'll try not to cry through the song as we begin to tell the story from the perspective of the lily pad on Aunt Mattie's Sister's Kids. But it's one of those tearjerkers, and I believe that it's going to open up some doors for our playwrights. And if you bear with us, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to present that to you today. And we are going to have to tell you that when we go into the throne of grace, I interrupt these airways, ladies and gentlemen. Harriet Tubman has been summoned to be here personally, and she wants to conduct our ritual. She wants to give us instructions as to what we are to do and how she was used as the leader in the Underground Railroad. So I interrupt these airways to bring her to us as she talks to us about her passage in the middle, in the underground, and how she said, give us liberty or give us death. She said that if you would not give her freedom, she would die fighting for her liberty. So I interrupt these airways, ladies and gentlemen. Right after we do our libation, we will be hearing from Harriet Tubman, and we will summons her presence here to lead us into a writing article, a perspective from the oracles. This is a short story that is coming out of a writing and a collection of Aesop fables. And the young man, Amsterdam, is the one that wrote these short stories, and he has done them justice, and I'm sure you will think so too. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go over and listen to what Harriet has to say. We're going to even stop our libation. We're going to even stop our prayer because Harriet's in the house today, and the Spirit has already summoned her here, so she's already set to tell us what she wants us to know. Stay tuned. You're in the atmosphere.
They are perfectly still. Don't let them know. They won't be strong. Hear it. The sting of the soup is less venomous than the sting of flavor. For the fangs of a voracious flavor eat away at in the cave of pleasure.
So with my size or my sixth season, I might be small. I suffer from Jesus still, and I am one of the supposedly weak sex. But I'll stand up to anybody or anything at any time because I've got light on my side. And the voice is always listening. I remember when the voice first came to me that night. My spirit was restless. My soul was weary. I couldn't sleep. It was like I was studying on something and didn't know what. I got up and I stepped outside my castle. A warm south wind warmed my face. A blood moon danced coldly around the menacing cloud as it suspended itself in a star of death. Maid servant, maid servant, Harriet, my daughter, don't let your spirit be troubled. Stand and deliver yourself and your people across the river of spirit. Dream dreams, sin dreams. No longer will your people be a reproach among nations. I will turn their plowshares in the wind. Lead my people out of the sea of the dead, across the rivers of life. I will baptize and bless them in the waters of truth. Bring my children of the sunshine out of the darkness into the night, the light of liberty, and let them bask and be indulged by its warmth. In the end that I knew that there was one of two things I had a right to, liberty. And if I could not have one, I would have the other. For no man should take me alive. I should fight for my liberty as long as my strength lasts. The voice has spoken what I knew was true. I had married John Tubman, a freed man by his master. I was still a slave. My husband refused to join me on my rendezvous with liberty. But no matter, no matter, the voice has spoken, and it has decreed what must be so. I was bound to stand and deliver myself and my people into the bosom of the sea. My two brothers started out with me, but they lost their nerve and returned to the dead of slavery, and I went on by myself. I wasn't afraid. I knew that I had been given wings. I walked through the back ways of Maryland in my worn-out shoes for days. One night, I come to a creek. I looked at the holes in my shoes, and I looked at the creek again. But they didn't matter, because I knew I wore the gospel shoes. So I waded steadily against the current across the water during the dead of night. Too tired to continue, I hid myself amidst the fire-colored brush that skirted the bank. When I awoke, the night had ebbed. A red-orange-colored sun that looked as big as it was smiled down upon me as it hovered in the east. Its rainbow-colored rays rained down upon me, flooding and burning my soul. My new day had just begun, and from then on, I would live by the promise of life. I had reached Pennsylvania. I had that nest of freedom. I was free. During my night of slavery, I had known hunger, suffering, hard work, and even abuse. When I was 15, an overseer struck me in my head with a 2-pound weight. The thing hit me so hard, I still have seizures and dizzy spells. None of that matters now. Over the last 10 years, I have made 19 trips through the tunnel of darkness to deliver my people across the waters of freedom into the light of day. And I have never lost a passenger on that imaginary train we call the Underground Railroad. I didn't seem to need money. That's why I toted my pistol with me. And I told everybody, you're free or die. No, sir. I told all of them. So ain't gonna be no turning around once we on our way. I even carried a lot of them to make them go to sleep during the whole time. I found that the best time to begin the journey was on Saturday night. That way, we could get a good head start before the newspaper come out months notifying everybody there was fugitives on the loose. Oh, I said, there were certainly some hard times, but I knew because the voice had spoken to me that there would be a way made out of nowhere. When I needed money for my trip, I collected tips, music, and other funds from people, mostly black people, who supported my cause. When I needed more funds, I hired myself out as a domestic servant to earn the money I needed. Some of the Quakers helped in the work of the Underground Railroad. Others of the Quakers refused to have anything to do with it. They wouldn't do anything to hurt a fugitive, but they wouldn't do anything to help either. It was against the policy of the Mother Church for Quakers to help fugitives. This one Quaker man, Thomas Garrett, certainly helped me though. I remember one time he bought me some new shoes. I had walked so much, I had completely worn out my boots. I thanked him for his gesture and went on my way to the tomb of slavery. Lord, those shoes hurt my feet so bad, it felt like my toes were tired. It's nothing like trying to break in a new pair of shoes. I felt like crying. Then a voice said to me, "Harry, why are you worrying over your feet? You've got something more important to do." From that moment on, it felt like my feet got through. And I went on down and I did what I was supposed to do. Now I rescued my sister, my mother, and father, and up with the 300 more. People said, "Harry, how is it that you never got caught?" I tell him, "It's because I never ventured anywhere but where the voice told me to go. I didn't rely on my own lips, but the spirit of freedom, that was my guide. I led so many people out of bondage that they started calling me Moses. My route was usually through Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New York. But I change up periodically just to confuse the slave catchers. Those slave catchers were bloodhounds and rats. They were in it for the money. And if the slave owner said they wanted a fugitive dead or alive, the slave catchers would just as soon kill you and take you back and leave you living. Times got so hard, people's hearts got so hard, and the slave catchers got so greedy that it wasn't safe for any black, slave or free. They had long since started taking seed blacks off the womb and taking them south and selling them as slaves. This happened to William Steele's brother Peter. When Peter was only 5 years old, Peter stayed in slavery for 40 years until he could earn enough money to buy his freedom from his slaveholder. He had to leave his wife and family in slavery, though. And what we would have. When Peter got back to Philadelphia, he was directed to a man who chronicled and kept an account of those that found freedom. He told the man a story, and a chill went up the man's back, for the story was too familiar. The man was William Steele, a conductor, organizer, station keeper, and manager of the Underground Railroad line in Philadelphia, and Peter Wright. when they realized they were brothers, they embraced each other and shed tears of joy. It's just too bad that their mother and father would not live to see the kidnapped son was returned to home. And it's so sad for a child to be denied the love of a mother and father and a comfort of a home, like I say. It got to be where it wasn't safe for even three blacks in so-called free states. Blacks weren't treated the same as whites. It got so that in cities across the North, white mobs would get together and burn blacks out, stones or beatings. And if it wasn't safe for a free black, you know it wasn't safe for a fugitive slave. I thought, I can't leave these people in the United States. I have to take the land of Canada, the land of the free. It seemed a pretty good idea for me to stay there too. After the slave catcher got rid of the $30,000 voucher in my head. When I was in Canada, I ministered among the fugitives. I come back to the States every so often to get a fugitive. Up in Canada, I met John Brown, a man who led a raid on Harper's Ferry, Virginia Arsenal, 69. When John Brown introduced me around, he said, "Here is General Tully, the best and bravest general on the continent." Two things, John Brown and his men were martyrs for the cause of freedom. Two black men, Dangerfield Moody and Lewis F. Leary, were killed at the arsenal. Two other black men, Chiz Green and Fred Douglas, and a John A. Quigley, who attended their college in Ohio, over there. They went to the gallows after Brown. The deaths of these men were like an omen of things to come. Soon afterwards, this country was caught up in a raging storm. I'll tell you about that in time. What I say now is that it's too bad a great calamity must befall the fear of man and force people to stand up for what is right. It's too bad the temper must raise before men of power and prestige will listen to that voice inside them that tells them what is right and what is just. Take a lesson from those that fool themselves like that. Listen to that voice inside you that tells you what is right, what is just, what is good. You can deliver your dreams and your vision and take charge of your destiny.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Creative Story by Reed Armstead, right here out of a humble city, Indianapolis, Indiana, created a whole series of those short stories. I've used it throughout my teaching career. Harriet Tubman is one of my favorites, and I did not know that I would go on to gain the name of Moses. The things that Harriet has gone through, it caused chill bumps to go up and down my back as I spent time overseas delivering fugitives out of bad litigation situations. As I went overseas, it was prophesied that I was to deliver a large group of soldiers who were going through litigation. I gained the name of Moses before I went over there. Every time I would speak, the people would stand up and cry out, "Moses, Moses." I could hardly speak for them calling out Moses, as if I was to be their deliverer. So I wear that name proudly, Moses, because Harriet Tubman is a great match, and she was a general in the army. And as I went overseas, and I stood up for what I believed. I had the whole host against me and the government upon my shoulders. Nevertheless, I stood like a general, and there were other generals that came and stood by my side. There were even governors here in the United States that found out about my plight, that issued a government official order to let my people go and to release the orders that would allow me to return home. In another foreign country, you'll find it strange when your own people turn against you for standing up for what is right. I stood up for the people that they wanted to crucify. I stood up and had a voice for the Muslims who built a mosque there. I stood up for the soldiers who had litigation against them and the large masses of black people who were being fired after going abroad to give their life for the United States Army. I became the class agent to carry the case. I had the whole government upon my shoulders. You don't know what it's like to go in courtrooms and have to litigate on behalf of people who have lost their jobs because of racism. I say the United States Army needs to look into situations when it comes to civilians. Sometimes they don't know how to handle the civilians, and when they make the change of hands and transition, those people who should be rewarded for a job well done, sometimes they're transitioned out of their jobs. And I was no means an Indian, but instead I was a chief. And those who thought I was up for a chief position became afraid and sought to eliminate all the jobs for the blacks and eliminated every one of our jobs after we had been detailed to separate departments, to hold up departments in addition to working in our old previous jobs, working 10-hour shifts to keep the military abroad and to keep their families safe and their children safe. The things that we would get when the new concern came on, every one of those blacks in that department lost their jobs. 8 of us decided to fight back. We've made history. My story will be told in the story of the Real Sister Soldier. And the characters that were involved in the story will be written there for you to determine. Is this a way to treat your civilians when they go abroad to support the military? Is this a way to treat them instead of placing them in jobs? Instead, you displace them. You've caused the genocide. I wage genocide against the United States Army. And I aim to go to the White House to talk to Obama about the situation, because they did not ship my things, which are still abroad. A part of me is still owned by the government. Everything I owned, I had to leave abroad in the storage of the Germans. They were nice enough to keep it there, and they've written us several times about this 10,000 pounds of products or 18,000 pounds of household goods and what they are to do with it. Nevertheless, I'm going to tell my story, and it will be written in book form so that people will understand that racism is rampant throughout the nation, and what some soldiers and civilians have to go through is not right. Harriet came through the Underground Railroad, snatching souls out of slavery. But Omi went by way of the plane, erecting brothers and sisters who would have lost everything they had. Now, I played that tape for you to see. Each one of you should have a mission, and each one of you should have a destiny and a calling. There are issues all over the continent that you can oblige. Be like Harriet today. Let someone call you Moses. Moses, Moses, Moses. Let someone call you Moses and stand up for a cause today. You might have the government upon your shoulders, but you will be delivered. Just as Harriet said, give me liberty or give me death. You're going to give me one or the other. Harriet stood for liberty. Even though there were bounties on her head, she told everyone up there what would be involved if they decided to travel with her. And if they decided to turn and go back, they could choose death. I'm telling you that the thing that's about to come up on us, you're going to have to make a decision, because some of us may not get out of this thing alive. Liberty, there is a price to pay. And as Harriet taught us about what it meant to be a general, a lieutenant in the service, in the army, it is an honorable cause to stand for the cause of the people. But when your people go abroad and you abandon them, you forsaken them, they fall in lower than a refugee. There is a conversation that I still need to have with Obama. He needs to know what happened to his civilian teachers. He needs to know how we were treated abroad in another country where the country treated us better than our own people did. He needed to know when it came to women who stood up to carry a concern and the Family Life Center to the height of their dynasty, then to let other women who had no part in this victory come in and steal the glory and take over our jobs. I'll never forget that. That was a racism and a card played that should not have been played, that caused the white female to have odds against the black women. And I felt that we could have collaborated and worked together and brought that concern to victory. But nevertheless, jobs were taken away and people were displaced. And the problem has not been yet addressed. But as I tell the story in my book, it will be available for all the soldiers to read. And for all those who were involved, they did find discrimination. And they did find partiality. And they did come back and want to give a settlement. But how do you give a settlement for people's lives for 5 long years of suffering? How do you give punitive damages? How do you serve them in a proper way? I leave that question up on you today. I thank you for listening to Harriet Tubman. May it jar you to be a general or a soldier or a liberator. Give me liberty or give me death is what should be said, like Harriet said. Ladies and gentlemen, this segment is to cause you to think, cause you to wonder, what must I do in this world? What is my purpose? What issues can I help to resolve? How can I stand in the gap for those who are less fortunate and give the voiceless a voice? You have an opportunity. And you have a chance to do just that today. There are many obstacles and setbacks where you can speak out against injustice, racism, running rampant. You can speak out against that. You can speak out against the mistreatment in the military of how they treat the civilians. You can speak out against those teachers who lost their jobs and become displaced. You can speak out against those families who are abroad and can't get home, who are locked behind iron doors and have no orders to get home. You can speak out, soldiers. Why don't you speak out, soldier? And I know I'm speaking to a soldier today because many of them have come to my house with their complaints because they found a haven in my home to talk about the pressures that they were going through and how they vowed to go into the psychiatric ward in order to transition out of the army. There was much distress and hardship. Now that they're coming home, maybe we can reassess the situation to figure out how are we going to utilize our civilian teachers when they go abroad, and how must they be handled, and making sure that they're not discriminated against. And most of all, making sure that a genocide hasn't been placed upon them, where their families are displaced, their household goods are displaced, and they come home wounded beyond compare. Not only wounded to the point of losing everything, but wounded where they now have to start all over again. I say society owes a debt to those civilians. Every one of them should be found, and every one of them should be talked to about the forgiveness and begging the pardon of that concern that didn't make that situation right. During 9/11, all of the military people were transitioned off the base, but yet there were civilians left on the base because some of the colonels didn't know how to handle the situation. They left Americans right there in Germany with no ID, no bank accounts, no mail address. They left them. That is worse than leaving a fugitive slave on the side of the road. They should have intervened to make a decision. Why did people have to call on call lines to get through to a 9/11 to talk about people being stranded in Germany and couldn't get home? Well, I'll tell you, Obama, now you're releasing the people to go home. Look into the situation about the desolate problems of the teachers that go abroad. Yes, there is some complicated problems because we are those doggone civilians who nobody knows how to handle, but they should still be addressed because they're professionals and they've given up their life and changed their lifestyle to go abroad to support the United States Army, to stand like a real soldier. That is why the book is coming out, The Real Sister Soldier. Stay tuned for it. You'll hear about it, and you'll be able to make your decision about how do you become a Moses. Give me liberty or give me death. And I tell you, Moses has had her liberty, and she showed all of us how to press on and how to demand our freedom and our just due. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for listening to that segment of Moses. It is so near and dear to me. I wanted you to hear that. And it was necessary to exclude our libations today just to hear from Moses today. Stay tuned, and the next voice you'll hear is from a segment of a story from the Lily Pod. Stay tuned.
This next story is about Aunt Maddie's sister, Turin. Aunt Maddie's sister, Turin, came to stay at her house, you know. And Aunt Maddie ended up with more than what she could handle. Stay tuned for the story. Here we go. Aunt Maddie's sister's children are coming to stay at our house. Boy, we're so happy to hear that. Woo, Ruby gonna be coming here. My sister gonna come here. Send a rose. I know, with me. I just don't know what to be. I'm so excited. I haven't seen Ruby in so long. You know, I don't even know what she looked like no more. I know she had 9 children. Let me see. Let me count. She has Sandra. She's the oldest girl with long black hair, dark. Then there was Deborah. And then there was Clara. Clara got my mom's name. I know she got to be something special. Ooh, Pete, I know she got to be something special. Clara's got to be something special. That's the one that Ruby sent off to that preparatory school. Yeah, that preparatory school. She got to be something special. And then there was Clifford. Yeah, that's the first son. He was named after Clifford, my brother-in-law Clifford. And then there was let's see here, Levon, the real cute little Levon. And then she had them their twins, just the same time I had 19. She had Dorian and Vandora. So I know them kids are rolling all up and Tom and Jimmy and Lisa. And sure, they're going to be so happy to see their cousin. Woo-wee. My sister's children coming up here to stay with me. I can't wait. Woo, they should be on their way now. Linda, Lisa, y'all come on down here. Sherry, come on down here. Did I tell you that your aunt is coming to stay with us for the summer? Aunt Ruby, that's who she is. Aunt Ruby, okay? When she comes, I want you to act like young ladies. This is your auntie. That's my favorite sister. That's my aunt. Okay, my heart. Linda, I don't want you acting a fool. And don't be starting no mess, because I'm going to whoop your, you know. Don't you be starting no mess. And Cher, I want you to take and show Sarah and Deborah all about the high school, because they'll be going to school with you. And Tom and Jimmy, you know, you take Kiki. Oh, I forgot Poncho, that's right. Jesse Jr., the little one, that's the last boy. There were 2 boys, and there's Jesse and Clifford. You take them over to the basketball and show them their way around over at the basketball court, okay? But, Ma, what are you going to do there? Oh, what's that? No, we're going to be having them kids, man. What are you going to do? I knew you would be the one to complain.
I knew it. You're not telling me nothing was going to be complaining. And I tell you that just last night. Well, I ain't complaining. But nobody was sleeping in my bed. Well, what were you planning on putting all these things? Well, that's going to be 18 children, Mama. 18. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, Ma. 18 kids is a lot. You know, that's going to be 7 boys, 11 girls. Where are we going to sleep all these people, Ma? You just shut up, Lisa. I'm running things around here. I'll be the one to make the decision on that. I'll be the one. Man, have you considered, you know, we get 18 kids in the house, you know, there's only, let's see, 2 bathrooms working. Listen here, y'all going to accept these children. I don't care what you say. This is my sister's coming. And I don't have no mess out of none of y'all. And I'm going to tell you right now, everybody's going to have responsibilities around here. And we're going to get it up, we're going to pull it together, we're going to work it out. Because they're only going to be here a summer. That's all a summer. And my sister is my dear heart. I don't want nothing to happen while she's here. But I'm making it so plain and clear to y'all. Do you understand me? I'm running things right here, okay? Okay, Ma. Yes, ma'am. Y'all going back upstairs. Me and P has talked this over. Go on and upstairs. Don't you say a word, Tom. Don't you say a word. Get on upstairs. I'll call you back down when I need you. Maddie, I think it's mighty nice of what you want to do for Ruby and have him come here the whole summer. I think it's mighty nice. I'm going to support you as much as I can. I'll stand behind you, help you with the children, and do whatever we have to do. What do I need to be getting in? Do I need to go out there and you know, check at the bus stop or anything? No, Pete. They're going to come in the camp. Don't worry about it. They'll be in the camp. So all we have to do is just sit here and wait. I got the steamed beans on and got some chicken in the oven. And I'm going to have Linda come down here and make that cornbread and then make sure to make that potato salad. That'd be enough to feed everybody today. The biggest thing I'm having a problem with is getting all the food in the house. If you can go on out to the farm and take the kids out there and let them harvest some of that corn and bring it on in, and then we will take some of those other preserves and bring them up here. We have enough. We'll make it. We can make ends meet. It ain't no problem, Maddie. I know that. I told you. I support you. No problem. Thank you, Pete. Thank you very much. I sure do appreciate it.
Hey! Is it Ruby? It's Ruby! Hey, Ruby! Oh, Lord! You look just like Mama. Oh, Lord, you look like Mama. Come on in here, Pete. This my sister, Ruby. Hey, Ruby! Oh, Lord! Look at the twins! The twins! Oh, look at him! Give the ball a rice, Pete. Give the ball a rice. Come on in here, Santa. Oh, look at him with your legs so long. Look at him. Look at him. Oh, my sister's children are coming to stay at my house. My sister's children. Ruby, how was the trip? How was the trip, Ruby? Maddie, I just have to tell you, trip was mighty fine, but you know, I haven't been feeling so well. Oh, my back has been hurting, and you know, I've been having this little swelling around my stomach, and I intend to go check it out while I'm here. I didn't have a chance to do it. And let me see, Ruby, how you showed up? Girl, you sure you ain't pregnant? Maddie, if I was pregnant after 9 children, you'd be the first to know it. Are you sure, Ruby, now? Did you check it out before you left? Girl, my stomach's been swelling like this for quite a while now, and I don't rightly know what's happening to me, but I need to go back. The doctor said he's going to do something called a biopsy on me and see if everything's okay. So I may have to leave for a spell and go back just to have that test. Listen here, Ruby, let me tell you something. I don't want you to worry about nothing. If you got to go, you got to go. You follow the doctor's orders. And if you have to leave the children with me, I tell you, I'll take good care of them, and you can leave them in my hand, and you have my word. If anything should happen, anything, I'll keep them all together, and nothing won't happen. It ain't going to be no separate. Oh, Maddie, I don't think nothing's going to be wrong with me. I'm just going to do it for precaution. You know what I mean? Listen here, Ruby, hi, Clifford. That's my man. That's my boy. We had some good times together. He's still dancing the jig. Listen here, man. I haven't seen Clifford in a while. You know, since they put him in the home, you know, I don't go up to see him very much. Sandra and Deborah, they get around and see him. Sandra! Sandra, come here! Come here, let me see my little black hands off. Hey, look at here, look at here. This is a woman of the family. Here she Ruby. I know she be taking care of business at home. Man, I don't know what I would do without her. She's my right hand and my left hand. She takes care of everything, and she's all grown up now. Ain't much I can tell her. She's gone. She is just
so handy around the house that she does everything. Sandra, how old are you now? I'm 16, Auntie Natty. 16? Are you courting now? Or I date sometimes, not a lot though. Most of the time I'm trying to help mom around the house. I don't get a chance to do too much courting, you know? Well, that's fifth grade, Sandy. You still got that beautiful black hair. I'm telling you, I just.